Talktainment Radio Worldwide Sound. Talktainmentradio.com. We give you a reason to come. The world's greatest radio. We give you a reason to stay.
Radio, the way it should be heard.
You got the power.
The views and opinions expressed are those of the host and guest and not necessarily those of TalktainmentRadio.com, the management, the staff, or K&E World Network, LLC.
This is All in Our Family. I am Ms. Yolanda Robinson. We are all family. All in Our Family, heard exclusively on TalkTainmentRadio.com. Radio, the way it should be heard.
TalkTainmentRadio.com. You're listening to All in Our Family, and I'm S. Yolanda Robinson, and this is radio, the way it should be heard. Oh, I want to give a shout out to Linco Realtors for sponsoring this week's show. And I'd just like to thank you very, very much for the support that you're giving us. And also, I want our listening audience, the listening audience, to save the date, because All in Our Family is working with Total Man Ministry to do a program called Stop the Violence in Columbus, Ohio. So put that on your calendar, and we'll give you more information about it in our upcoming shows. But on January the 26th, it was a sad day for people all over the world, and particularly in the basketball community. The death of Kobe Bryant shook up everybody. I mean, we all had a connection to him. You know, we saw him playing with the Lakers. We saw him with his family. And so this program right now is going to be giving a tribute to Kobe Bryant. And we want the staff at Talktainment Radio and All in Our Family, we send our condolences to the Bryant family and also to the NBA family about the death. And we will be lifting them up in prayer. But on the program today, I have a giant in the basketball community. He's from Columbus. And you know what? He has coached some of the giants in basketball. He's coached Michael Jordan. He's coached Shaquille O'Neal and Kobe Bryant. And his name is Jim Clemens. Jim, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you for being on our show. But, you know, you're a basketball legend, you know, all over the world and in Columbus. And, you know, you've done so many wonderful things working with the youth, not just in our city, but all over the world. And before we start this program, I just want to thank you for all the contributions that you have given in our community. Thank you so much. And, you know, you decided to play basketball. What made you decide to be a basketball player?
Pardon me, but that's a long story. I grew up born in North Carolina.
Uh-huh.
And my mom played basketball.
Oh.
And I really wasn't a basketball fan. My uncle, bless his heart, wanted me to be a baseball player.
Uh-huh.
And basketball was the furthest thing from my mind. But when we moved to Ohio, and further yet, we moved to the Milo Grogan district in Columbus.
Mm-hmm.
Basketball and the boys' club occupied a lot of the time after school.
Uh-huh.
And basketball just wasn't in my preview as to a sport. I was a baseball player.
Uh-huh.
But in the seventh grade, I went out for the team.
Uh-huh.
I was one of the last cut.
Uh-huh.
That in itself was a miracle.
Uh-huh.
But I decided that, you know, it was a game and everybody else was playing it, so I was going to investigate it.
Uh-huh.
And funny thing happened, the more I began to play,
uh-huh.
You went from being the last chosen
uh-huh.
to at least getting on the floor.
Uh-huh.
And I started watching the other kids play at playground time and uh-huh. watching what they were doing and,
uh-huh.
and the competition that evolved from it.
Uh-huh.
I just started playing more and more basketball. And Didn't have very many friends. There's a group of us that hung out together, mm-hmm. but I grew up like in North Columbus, an alley brat. Uh-huh. And then on the back of everybody's garages, we had different hoops, uh-huh. and you didn't have to walk all the way back to a playground. Uh-huh. So I just started fooling around playing basketball on the play, you know, in the alley. Uh-huh. And one thing led to another, and funny thing happened, the more I played, the better I got.
Wow, so it took a lot of practice.
It took a tremendous amount of practice and playing outside in the cold, and then I started carrying papers, and it kept you know, active, chasing the balls down. And we had, in those days, you could burn your garbage, and so we'd have these big cans, and the fire would be going, and we'd take breaks intermittently and go over and warm our hands over the fire, and then go back and play 10 or 15 minutes and come back, and so one thing led to another. And I became a kind of an introvert, and basketball and baseball, I was a pitcher, outfielder. In football, I was a quarterback, wide out, safety. But basketball, all I needed was a ball and a hoop. And all that time I could spend by myself just working on my game, or trying to find a game to work on. And one thing led to another, and basketball became more of an intrigue. It became very challenging because I couldn't shoot worth a quarter. Uh-huh. But I could always hustle and play defense.
Well, one of your teammates told me that you used to practice jumping up on the building over there on Hamilton Avenue. When they would walk to school with you, there was a particular building that you just liked to practice jumping up on top of.
Well, if you grew up in the Linden neighborhood, we were small. And when I say small, not very tall. And there was a pride in rebounding. If you didn't have hops, you couldn't play. If you couldn't handle the ball, you couldn't play. If you weren't really to be aggressive and get down and kind of get dirty, you couldn't play because we were small. So there was a premium put on being aggressive without fouling, and being active with the basketball, in basketball terminology, attacking. And so we could all push the ball up the floor, and we weren't very good jump shooters. We were aggressive taking the ball to the cup. And so that's the way we played. When you called a foul, you better gotten foul. There were no ghost fouls in our community. That was the start of a fight, an argument, and we just didn't do a lot of that because we wanted to play. And so, hops and being able to touch the rim in those days was an accomplishment. Because, yes, like I say, we were small but quick. And that's the way we learned how to play. And I tell people, even now, during that age of our maturity and growing, you could tell where you live based on what kind of game you had. You know, the suburban kids, they were jump shooters. Kids from the city, we attacked the rim. Certain parts in the city, guys just shot. They all shot the ball just alike. You know what the name was, but you can tell because they shot the ball that way. They were from that part of the city. And I had cousins that lived over, that went to East. So the thing is, we'd always make light because Linden and East were, yes, at that time, the rivalry wasn't what it was in the end or is now, but it was beginning to grow because 71 was being built, and we moved from 4th Avenue to 17th Avenue, and so we had a lot of friends. I had a lot of friends that went to Central, and they went to I can't remember the middle school that we migrated to, but I went to Lenmore. And so a lot of people you didn't see after elementary school, because the community got spread out, and some went north, some went south, east, west. Marion Franklin was being built, and some went to Lockbourne Avenue way, and that fueled Marion Franklin. So you had friends, that lived all over the city, but you grew up a little bit here and there elementary-wise, so you knew people in different sections of the city.
Now, who was your role model? In basketball, who was one of your role models?
Oh, wow. As I began to learn the game, I played all the positions. I watched Cassie Russell and Lou Hudson from the Big Ten. In the post, I watched Will Chamberlain. Yes. Elgin Baylor was my favorite because he did more things that we did, double clutching, taking the ball to the hoop. He backed off. He'd shoot the jump shot. You come into him. He'd take the ball to the hoop. So I told him this because I was fortunate enough to be a teammate of his my rookie year in Los Angeles, how much I admired him as a player growing up, and I still don't think he really believed me, but the fact is he was the one that I really put a lot of, you know, kind of a stutter step and trying to get to the cup and being an all-around player. And I'd have to thank also the coaching that I had growing up in helping me to realize that it wasn't about me. It was about how good our team could be. And I was just a part of a team. And winning was more important than anything else. Walking, because I hated to lose. I shouldn't say hated. I dislike losing. And so I wanted to win. Regardless of how many points I scored, that wasn't an issue. I wanted to be able, at the end of the day, whatever team I was on, I wanted to be.
You wanted to be the winner.
Well, because my mama, well, that's the way we just grew up.
You just like winning. I don't
blame you. Yeah. That's, you know, that's why they play the game.
That's why you play. You don't play to lose.
You certainly don't.
I certainly wouldn't want to be on a team that wanted to lose.
My mom was a good. We played Old Maids, a game she called Solitaire, pick 'em up, and that helped our memory. My mom, and I have an uncle who was a great checker player. He owned a barber shop up in Detroit. And his spare time, they played checkers. And so when I always loved to see him, and once again, they didn't let us win. I can remember the first time I beat them. You know, it's like you finally accomplished something because they made you earn your stripes.
Wow.
And that was something, once again, that we all, I think, appreciate, my sisters and I included, is that came of age and you had accomplished something, you knew it wasn't given to you.
Yeah, that you worked hard for. You know, did you ever dream that you would be a coach for some of the basketball legends that we have today? Did you ever think that back then?
No. The one thing I talk a lot these days to young people about sports, athletics, career choices, and a path to get to where you want to be within your dream. What I wanted from basketball, what I wanted from sports was a college education. What I wanted. I'm the middle child between two very bright and wonderful sisters. And academically, I don't to this day ever remember them bringing home a B. And I can remember the first C I brought home. You would have thought I committed I don't know what kind of crime. But the fact is, without education, I knew I wasn't going to be allowed to participate in sports. And so the thing that was dangled in front of me, if you wanted to play, you had to bring home good grades. And I knew my sisters needed an education. Once again, I come from a home of strong-willed women. And I know and knew in my heart I need my sisters to be educated. I was going to get an education. I don't know how. In those days, that Vietnam was just beginning to surface in our community, in our country. So I had in my mind, if push comes to shove, if I didn't get what I needed athletically in terms of scholarship, I was going to, you know, go like so many brothers do or did in that time, go to the surface and come back on a GI Bill or something. But as God blessed me with opportunities to get an education through athletics and academics, I didn't pay a dime for college. And in fact, my sisters didn't either. We all were, they were on academic scholarships and I was on athletic scholarship. And so God worked it out and he continues to bless us even to this day.
That's awesome. You know, you coached Michael Jordan and Shaquille O'Neal and Kobe Bryant. What was their leadership style? Were they similar? What made them the great athletes that they are?
Well, simply talent.
Their talent?
Talent made them great, but their attitude and their ability to relate and allow the teachers, i.e. slash coaches, mm-hmm. to do their job, mm-hmm. allowed everyone to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
Michael, when we first got to Chicago, and I came in with Phil Jackson, Phil took over for Doug Collins, and I got hired, let's say, late in the season, in August, and I didn't know what I was walking into. I wasn't aware that Michael was the legend to become, or the legend he'd already built, because he scored, I think, 63 points in Boston in a playoff game, and he was all this and all that. Well, I coached against Michael at Furman University, and he was at North Carolina University, his freshman or sophomore year, I forget which, and Michael was a good player. And then I was fortunate enough to be named head coach at Youngstown State, and all of a sudden Michael has just blown up. And I'm thinking, wow, you know, this, that, and the other, and word was that Michael wasn't going to go for this, Michael wasn't going for that. And I'm going to tell you, never did some people overstate who he was or his ability to accept coaching, teaching. And I tell people to this day, Michael allowed us as a coaching staff to teach him, to talk to him. And all thing Michael wanted to do was compete and have people around him to compete in earnest, because that was what he wanted to do, is just put competitive people on the floor and let us play. And he was a he was a joy to coach, because when your best player falls in line, when your best player understands what's at stake and chimes in, the other players don't do anything but say amen.
All right. Now, Kobe Bryant had Michael Jordan was his idol. But did they have a similar style?
I'm not going to say similar style, but I'm going to tell you, I think they're both cut from the cloth of, hey, I'm going to compete. I'm going to do the best I can to do to give you my best shot. And I think before we got to Los Angeles, Kobe came from high school straight into the pros. Michael at least had 2 years of Dean Smith of coaching and understanding team play. And so I think Kobe had to be talked into it a little more about team play and what is expected of team basketball to play at this level. Certain things, his skills alone would allow him to do at the high school level. But when you move to that next level, then once again, everyone has talent. The question now becomes, what are you willing to do? If you say you want to win, you have to kind of put your money where your mouth is in terms of what are you going to do to try to produce this winning atmosphere and environment that you say that you want to do, and how what's your plan of attack. And so the first year or so was growing for all of us. But in the end, I think once again, because of Michael's success within the same system that Kobe played in, and thank God that Kobe once again is a student and became even more a student of the game by going back, watching film, being critiquing his play and what's happening as a unit. Once Kobe understood that and got a handle on his role once again of leadership, he took to the forepoint of now, I can help, and I want to be competitive, and this is what I need to do, then show me the way.
Now, as a coach, what were some of the main things? I mean, you talked about team, and mostly I hear you saying team play. What did you want to teach the entire team, and particularly when you're playing with a lot, you're coaching a lot of professional what were some of the main things that you wanted to bring out in them?
Well, when you talk about winning and you talk about success, it's difficult for those who've had it to really understand, in order to continue at the highest level, oftentimes you have to leave your ego at the door. And then it becomes you not worrying so much about yourself, but you worry about the people that comprise your unit, and that takes the pressure off of you, and your attention now is basically to the person to your right and to your left, and you don't worry about yourself. Mm-hmm. They will worry about you. Mm-hmm. You worry about the people that comprise the team. Mm-hmm. The team worries about the team, and the individuals takes a backseat, and we worry about how we are doing rather than how I am doing and what my agenda is. Mm-hmm. My agenda becomes our agenda.
The whole team's
yes,
agenda.
Ma'am. Oh, yes, ma'am.
That's wonderful. Now, that can apply to real life.
Well.
In a real life situation.
Well, the thing is, I think after our successes in Chicago and how we were able to go to Los Angeles and 1999-2000 and win a championship that year, I don't think any of us really expected. Well, we had a new system that we had to institute, and you don't know how rapidly people accept and want to grow.
Uh-huh.
Talking about it is easy, but being able to now to show it and to apply it becomes the ultimate challenge.
All right. We have Skip Young on the line. Hi, Skip. How you doing?
How you doing, Yolanda? How's everything?
Interviewing
my man.
I know that's right. and your former teammate. I mean, y'all played at Linden together, right?
Yeah, we were there together. We were a pair. Yeah, we were attached.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm not going to hold you up. I thank you for this opportunity. I just wanted to call in and say on behalf of the Greater Columbus Basketball Legends Association, its members and executive board, we just want to send out our heartfelt condolences for the Bryant family of Kobe and Gianna and the other families and the pilot that was involved in that tragic incident. And, it's very heartfelt. We all have children, and we all have people that we know and love, and so when those things happen, it's really devastating.
Yes, when it happens to anybody, that is, lose their family like that. Yes, yes. Well, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you for calling in, Skip. We appreciate it,
and appreciate all the
things that the Greater Columbus Basketball Legends Association does here in our city. Thank you.
Just trying to get better. Okay.
Right.
Take care.
Okay.
Take care, Jim. Talk to you later.
Okay. Thank you. All right. What would you tell a young student that was aspiring to play basketball, Jim? I mean, if you were talking, you do speeches all over the country and all over the world. What do you tell them if they want to be a Jim Clemens or a Michael Jordan? What do you tell them? What do they need to do if that's part of their dream?
Well, I think you've alluded to it in this entire conversation. You have to not put all your eggs into one basket. You have to learn what sports can and will do for you.
Mm-hmm.
But the other side of that coin is, what are you willing to do to better your life through sports, with sports, if you say you indeed want this from sports?
Mm-hmm.
It's a two-way street.
Mm-hmm.
And the things that I talk about is the commitment to both academics and sports. Really meaning, when you say that you want to be a athlete or become an athlete, and you're going to put your work in, well, athletics and academics really go hand in hand. And I only hope that the moms, the dads, and the grandmommies, and the aunties, and the uncles, once again, who watch their loved ones out there playing, if after that game is over with, or before that game started, that the homework is done, I understand that your son and your daughter, they have a certain skill, they're already exhibiting a lot of skills, but don't be satisfied with just the athletic portion of that, because the mind, it can be trained a lot of different ways. So apply some of this training and learning and memory, once again, to the English classes, the math classes, the French.
Science.
All this is what we're talking about. We want whole and complete individuals, not just the athletic portion, to be successful. So sooner or later, ball is going to be rolled away, kicked away, punched away. Mm-hmm. Now what are you going to do mm-hmm. with your life? Mm-hmm. So the same components and the competitive nature that you applied in learning those athletic skills, mm-hmm. now take a page out of that book and say, hey, I know I can do this. I just have to rearrange and apply these same skill sets, mm-hmm. boom, academically, mm-hmm. to what it is I want to do. Mm-hmm. Have a vision of that.
Yes.
Who you are when sports is going to be taken away. Mm-hmm. You don't want to be didn't you used to be.
Yes.
You still are that person.
Yes.
Now you get the chance to show the world yes. and show the communities yeah. right the other side of that coin.
Yes.
They've only been looking a
yes.
part of you.
Yes.
Show them who you are in totality.
Yes. Now you have transitioned from, are you retired right now from basketball, right?
I don't know what I am. I'm waiting. As I tell
so
people.
So you got a lot of skills though.
Well, yeah. I'm waiting. And letting the Lord actually show me the path.
Yes.
I'm trying to build another brand and doing what yeah. I actually am doing
yeah.
now.
Yes.
Talking to young people about mm-hmm. who it is they mm-hmm. want to become mm-hmm. if sports is not available. Mm-hmm. Not everyone is going to even get the opportunity, no matter yeah. how well you play yeah. and how good you are.
Well, what advice do you give to those people? Because, you know, sometimes people put their heart into they think they're going to be in the NBA, and it's not, everybody doesn't get it. What would you tell the student that didn't get that didn't make the cut?
I'm telling them the same thing I'm telling you right now.
Uh-huh.
Still hit those books.
Still hit those books.
That's the alternative.
Yeah.
That's the other side of that coin.
Uh-huh.
You know, there are a lot of people that made All-American and don't have the luxury of uh-huh. even trying out for a team uh-huh. or getting cut from a pro team.
Uh-huh.
And now they got Velcro on the chin and they got uh-huh. Velcro on uh-huh. the chest. And uh-huh. that's all you see right uh-huh. now walking around.
Yeah.
And they're the poor souls.
Yeah.
Don't be that
don't
person.
Don't give up, yeah.
Well, because yeah. there are other things that you can do or you wouldn't have made it this far.
Yes.
So go back and within yourself uh-huh. find that inner you that says, hey, well, what else can I do?
Uh-huh.
That's why you should pick a major in school that, once again, I heard this from Les Brown about uh-huh. 3 or 4 years ago
uh-huh.
when he said 87% of the people that work mm-hmm. go to a job they do not like.
Isn't that something?
Yes, it is. And that's a shame.
Yeah, because you should put love in your work.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, I mean, when you put love in it, you're going to get a good product.
You want a return.
Yeah, you loved basketball, and you put love in it.
But I love teaching
And you
more.
Love teaching even
so,
more.
So, I'm and a, so, and so guess, hopefully I'm a better teacher than yeah. I am a player,
yes.
because now I'm getting an opportunity to teach.
Yes.
And what I'm teaching them to look within themselves, unless you got it.
Yes.
But someone or something has to come out of you to say, yeah that's what I want to
do. Yeah, yeah. You know, as a teacher, how did you feel being able to bring that out of a lot of the basketball players? I mean, I know a teacher feels so good. Did you feel that same inner joy watching some of the players and watching them evolve into business people, into great players? How did you feel?
Well, it's always nice to be able to look at a former player
yes.
when they've left the game.
Yes.
And they know and you know
uh-huh.
the growth that they encountered
uh-huh.
from being, quote unquote, just a player
uh-huh.
to being a dad,
yeah.
to being a father,
yeah.
to being a successful business person,
yeah.
to having a place in the community in which they live uh-huh. because they know they've earned that respect.
Yes, yes, yes. And a lot of people, many of the players like yourself and LeBron's and Kobe were given a lot back to the community. You participated with Kobe in the Brothers Crusade in California. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I had the fortune, it's called Brotherhood Crusade,
mm-hmm.
and they are a community service organization,
uh-huh.
much like a United Way.
Uh-huh.
And they impact about 3,000 young people per day in wow. a different various programs that they have throughout the city.
Uh-huh.
In addition to, they wanted me to put on a basketball camp and came uh-huh. in 2004.
Uh-huh.
And I told them, I just don't do basketball camps.
Uh-huh.
It has to have a purpose.
Uh-huh.
And so we put together a program called Books and Basketball.
Wow.
And the books came before the basketball because we know how often basketball comes before the books. But
uh-huh.
we wanted the books. Uh-huh. And we taught in our summer camp. It was only for a week, but I think we touched a lot of young people's hearts. financial literacy, a science program, talked about nutrition, health issues. We taught as a side, one of the classes was, we taught them the game of chess.
Yes.
And we did that just to let them know that in the game of chess, every move is critical.
All right.
So that just once again reiterated or put in the mind that every move that you make in life is vital to where you end up in life.
Every move. Thank you, Jim Clemens, for being on this week's program of All in Our Family. Thank you so much, and I'll see you next week. Love you.
Brenda Lynn Robinson shared her creative energy with the people of Columbus and the Mount Vernon neighborhood.
Now, the Greater Columbus Arts Council hopes her creative spirit will inspire future generations of Black artists.
The two new programs are open to Black and visual artists are the Amina Robinson Fellowship for local artists and the Amina Robinson Residency for national artists. More information about both programs is available at gcac.org or call 614-224-2606.
Attention, Central Ohio! Attention, Central Ohio! Lynn Cole Realty has an important announcement to make.
Effective immediately. We will sell your home for 5%. Yes, 5% commission. You will get the same great service we have provided for over 35 years. Hurry and call Lynn Cole today at 614-375-2289. We have buyers for all areas. Call today. 614-375-2289. 614-375-2289. You'll be glad you did.
For the best home fragrance and beauty products, shop Ash Kickin online.
That's A-S-H-K-I-C-K-I-N.
Made with 100% natural quality ingredients and handcrafted with your family in mind, Ash Kickin products are better than those other guys. Ash Kickin candles, incense, body butter, face moisturizer, and hair moisturizer are priced just right, and you can get yours at 10% off with coupon code TALK17. Support this 100% Black-owned business and get your home and body smelling and feeling all right.
That's
A-S-H-K-I-C-K-I-N. Shop Ash Kickin online at www.ashkickin.com.
Think you can't afford life insurance? Think again. You might be surprised at how affordable it can be. 80% of Americans overestimate the cost of life insurance. Maybe it's time to swap a few small expenses for some big peace of mind. Life insurance can protect what matters most, and it's the right thing to do. Let's talk today. So call me, Marvin Smith, at American Family Insurance at 614-986-3105. You can also visit my website at marvinsmithinsurance.com. American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin, 53783.
Sex Code War by Kahari Inaharo, the author of the Essence Magazine bestseller Race Code War, is releasing his second book, Sex Code War. Be on the lookout for Sex Code War.
My name is Al Edmondson. I'm a business owner and community organizer. I want to encourage you to visit the King Lincoln District. Our community. It's a great place to live, work, and worship. Catch a show at the Lincoln Theater. Enjoy smooth jazz at the King Arts Complex. Enjoy great food and visit our historical churches and newly remodeled homes. Live, work, and worship the King Lincoln District.
Our government doesn't seem to care that 9 million children have no health insurance, even though every dollar spent immunizing children against illness saves more than $16 in medical costs to make them better. Doesn't anyone see? We're wasting money and allowing children to get sick.
I am Susie Flynn. A vote for me is a vote for the 9 million uninsured children.
9 million uninsured children need a solution now. For more information, go to electsusie.com.
I was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes at age 33.
with not one day off since. But JDRF has my back, funding research toward a cure, prevention, and treatments that really help the millions like me to have a better life. The scientists funded by JDRF test themselves every day so that someday I won't have to. Join us. Your help is our hope. JDRF, improving lives, curing type 1 diabetes.
Hey, wake up. You can't dream your way into college. There are actual steps you need to take, steps that go beyond just getting good grades. So if you're serious about college, visit knowhowtogo.org today. Brought to you by the American Council on Education, Lumina Foundation for Education, and the Ad Council.
At TalkTainmentRadio.com, we don't just talk, we don't just entertain. We've combined talk radio with the latest in online entertainment, with the ability to listen live at no cost 24/7. We are the premier online radio station. Outperforming the digital quality of our competitors, our shows are produced in a state-of-the-art studio by the best radio professionals in the business. Hosting live shows on location at some of the area's greatest and most popular events, we give you exactly what you want to hear with talk radio that matters to you. Join us online at TalkTainmentRadio.com, where you can listen live or play podcasts from the best shows in online talk radio. We give you a reason to come. We give you a reason to stay. TalkTainmentRadio.com. Radio, the way it should be heard.
We must build and bond our family.
We've got the power.
TalkTainmentRadio.com. You're listening to All in Our Family, and I'm S. Yolanda Robinson, and this is radio the way it should be heard. Listening audience, on today's program, I am giving you, we're going to have the people that make things happen in the neighborhood. A lot of times they don't get noticed, but they're the hard workers, you know, and we're going to talk about politics from my house to City Hall to the State House and to the White House. And on the show today, I have Larry Mason, who is the president of Cumberland Ridge Civic Association, and Connie Boykin, who is the president of the Deschler Association. Connie, how are you today?
I'm doing all right, Yolanda. How are you doing?
Oh, just fine. And Larry, how are you doing?
Doing fine, Yolanda. Thank you for having us here.
Oh, thank you for being here. Now, what is your idea of a good neighborhood, Connie? What would, if you were driving down the street, what would you consider? I mean, looking at it, or what would you consider a good neighborhood?
Clean.
Clean?
Safe.
Okay.
And a neighborhood where the neighbors know each other.
Oh, okay.
You know, because you have to know one another before you can work together.
Okay.
And in my neighborhood, Deschler Park Civic, we all have communicated with each other.
Uh-huh.
We know each other's children. We know, you know, who they are. We know a lot of the economic, social, and health situations of our neighbors. So we do care. We are a caring community.
So you can tell that when you drive in the neighborhood, because it's clean and you don't have, and the neighbors know each other, and it's safe.
Well, let's put it this way. That's the way it should be.
That's what you work towards.
Okay, that's what you have to work toward.
Yes.
But you always have someone who doesn't live there trying to come through and tear it down.
Yes, yes. Larry, what do you consider a good neighborhood?
I think the best thing is kind of taking what Mr. Boykin is saying, is expectation. Mm-hmm. In other words, when you come to a community and you see how clean it is and how neat it is and mm-hmm. how the neighbors generally work, because mm-hmm. a lot of times people will transition into it mm-hmm. as well as become a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you come to the neighborhood, you want to be able to look around you and see what's going on. You see a very neat neighborhood. You see mm-hmm. a very safe neighborhood where neighbors are talking mm-hmm. together. And you want to also find out what type of associations do they have so you can communicate mm-hmm. with them just as much outside mm-hmm. of what you do within your own home.
Mm-hmm.
And just the whole idea of getting to know your neighbors, mm-hmm. that's one. Mm-hmm. Being able to create a safe environment, mm-hmm. that's two. And then more importantly, being proactive within your neighborhood, mm-hmm. to make sure that these ideals are being institutionalized.
Now, how do you, Connie, how does your neighbors communicate with each other?
Well,
y'all communicate?
Well, we have a meeting every third Thursday, mm-hmm. and in our community, mm-hmm. and we bring up different issues that we feel that are important. Mm-hmm. But let me back up a minute, Yolanda, and let mm-hmm. me say this. Mm-hmm. The thing is that each community member has to share in the responsibility. Mm-hmm. And that responsibility is that, first of all, mm-hmm. I would probably say litter. Litter is a number one thing, especially mm-hmm. if you live in an inner city neighborhood. Mm-hmm. You know, litter gets you a certain image. Mm-hmm. You know, people come in the neighborhood, they want to buy a home. Mm-hmm. You know, you start looking at the county treasurer, mm-hmm. you know, wants to, mm-hmm. you know, give, you can put estimates on your house. Mm-hmm. All of that, you know, curb appeal and all of that sort mm-hmm. of thing mm-hmm. is very important. Mm-hmm. And every neighbor has a responsibility mm-hmm. because you might think that you have your house together and mm-hmm. it looks good, but if the neighbor down the street mm-hmm. has a pile of trash mm-hmm. or is parking on the grass mm-hmm. or doing something like that, mm-hmm. what they're doing, they're not only disrespecting their neighborhood, but they're also disrespecting your property value. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, that's what's important. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What about you, Larry? How do you communicate with, how does your neighborhood communicate with each other?
Well, for one, with our civic association, we get together at least once a month, mm-hmm. but our general board elected members, we get together at least once, sometimes twice, maybe three mm-hmm. times a month. This mm-hmm. is something I've mm-hmm. just started. My tenure just started this mm-hmm. year, mm-hmm. but we started wanting to get on the ground mm-hmm. of looking at the whole landscape of the community and mm-hmm. see some initiatives we wanted to get started. So mm-hmm. I think the inner workings of the community, as far as your board, that type of thing, mm-hmm. they need to get together as much as possible and then put together these ideas and then span it out to the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And from there, trying to get all the neighbors on board from there.
Mm-hmm. Trying to work
together. Well, Yolanda, I think that what Larry is saying is true mm-hmm. because when you're in a civic, it's mm-hmm. not a one time a month deal. Mm-hmm. You know, you are basically involved in that community three or four times. People will call you on the telephone. Yeah. You're communicating around. So mm-hmm. it's really a 24/7 uh-huh. operation uh-huh. when you take on the mantle of being the president mm-hmm. or being a responsible member of mm-hmm. a board mm-hmm. in your civic. Mm-hmm. But the other thing is you learn a lot.
Yes.
That's true.
Yes. So, you know, you talked about issues in the community. How do you know what issues are relevant to the neighbors? How do you find out, Connie?
Well, primarily, you know, we have a thing called Neighborhood mm-hmm. That is, electronic community organizer. We have a Facebook page, mm-hmm. Deschler Park Civic Association. Mm-hmm. And we also communicate with the city, mm-hmm. okay? Mm-hmm. We're part of the Southside Commission. Mm-hmm. And so the Southside Commission communicates with us. We communicate with them. Mm-hmm. So there is a network.
It's okay?
A lot of communication.
Coordinating.
Right,
uh-huh.
That's right.
Okay, what about you, Larry?
Well, I want to take what Mr. Boykin is saying right here and say absolutely. Not only that, but I want to add something else. Mm-hmm. You know, each neighborhood, which a lot of neighbors don't have any idea, but each neighborhood is assigned in the liaison from the Columbus Police Department. Mm-hmm. And you need to reach out mm-hmm. and get ideals from there mm-hmm. and let them know that, hey, these type of issues are happening. Mm-hmm. But the good old-fashioned way of, I think, of communicating with your neighbors is mm-hmm. to get to know your neighbors and get to know at least mm-hmm. the neighbors from at least your block mm-hmm. and try to form some type of block mm-hmm. network, mm-hmm. even though it may be old school. Mm-hmm. And the thing that, again, Mr. Boykin talked about was mm-hmm. from the cyber side of it, mm-hmm. you know, there's Nextdoor.com, mm-hmm. you know, people have mm-hmm. Ring doorbells, mm-hmm. you know, there's mm-hmm. other countermeasures. I know one thing I'm going to do is I'm going to bring a guy in mm-hmm. to talk about safety measures, because he does kind of like safety parts of your home, looking mm-hmm. at different ideas within the community mm-hmm. as far as setting up cameras, mm-hmm. that type of thing, and being able to communicate with the city as well to see mm-hmm. what type of grant options might mm-hmm. be able to do that. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much it.
Speaking of the city, Connie Boykin, how often do you communicate with the city? I know you talked about the Civic Association, but have you had times when you had to go down to City Hall, and how is the relationship with City Hall?
Well, primarily is that, you know, I communicate with a number of individuals who sit on City Council, mm-hmm. and I've got a certain level of relationship with them. Mm-hmm. I try not to bring a lot of triviality to mm-hmm. them, mm-hmm. but I do bring very important issues, mm-hmm. and they know that when I come and talk to them that I'm just not talking about maybe something that's going on with my neighbor or whatever, mm-hmm. but basically big issues. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, you know, we had a company mm-hmm. down in on the south side, mm-hmm. and we kept hearing explosions, mm-hmm. but nobody would say who was doing that. So finally we found out that it was a company, mm-hmm. and what they were doing, they were crushing those containers that used to hold oxygen, mm. and so they were supposed to release all the oxygen, but they didn't. Mm. But we had to put code enforcement on them, mm. and you know, and once we start dealing with code enforcement, then code enforcement started putting things out, fillers out, mm-hmm. and they found them, mm-hmm. and they find them. Mm-hmm. Okay, we mm-hmm. also had mm-hmm. a individual who came to our commission, mm-hmm. and if you have issues with people not being very neighborly, you know, mm-hmm. and it's an issue within the community, mm-hmm. then mm-hmm. you have to take it to the commission, mm-hmm. and then the commission will take it to mm-hmm. the proper authorities. Code enforcement is number one. Okay, and you know, you have to understand that these business people, they feel like they run the city council, mm-hmm. and they don't realize, they don't respect the people who live in the community. Mm-hmm. So primarily, you know, working with code enforcement, working with your city council people, mm-hmm. working with your commission, mm-hmm. those are the ways that you get things done.
Now, does that take a long time to do that? I mean, some people think that it's an instant, it's like fast food, and you get it right away. How long did it take you to get those issues resolved?
Well, I'll tell you what, one thing you learn about the process, and I call it a process. Mm-hmm. At first, I was a very excited mm-hmm. individual. Mm-hmm. You know, I wanted to get things done right away. Mm-hmm. But I started to realize that government is a slow process. and when you're dealing with government, sometimes you're 2, 3, 4, sometimes 5 years out, mm-hmm. you know, as far as being able to resolve an issue. Mm-hmm. And it's just because there's a lot of legality. Mm-hmm. And once you start dealing with legality, mm-hmm. and those are the things that I as a community activist had no idea of, yes. all the legality.
Yes.
But when you start dealing with people who invested thousands of dollars into a company, uh-huh. or thousands of dollars into their home, uh-huh. and you're going there and you're trying to get them to correct some things that is influencing mm-hmm. the neighborhood negatively, uh-huh. then guess what? Uh-huh. You know, it's going to take a while. Mm-hmm. It's going to take a while.
Mm-hmm. And how you've been president for a little while. How do you measure the organization's success? I mean, your neighborhood's success, and how do you communicate that to your neighbors, Connie?
Well, I haven't been the president. I haven't ever been the president before.
Oh, okay.
But I've been the community liaison,
oh.
And I've also been the Southside Commission. Matter of fact, uh-huh. I founded. Along with others, the Southside Commission.
Uh-huh.
So I was a Southside Commissioner for 9 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically what I'm saying is that I didn't want to be the president. I wanted to get the overall perspective mm-hmm. and learn. And the city was very good at that because they have training programs.
Mm-hmm.
They train you. And mm-hmm. the city does a good job of getting you involved mm-hmm. in the community and the legalities mm-hmm. Of the Columbus community. Mm-hmm. So there's really not an excuse as long as you want to participate.
Mm-hmm. So it's out there. You just
it's out there, and they want you to get involved.
How did you communicate to the neighbors that the success of some of the things that you were doing what you're doing? Do you have a newsletter?
Basically our group mm-hmm. Since we've been together so long
mm-hmm.
you know, we knew each other
uh-huh.
and so basically, like when we wanted to do some renovation of mm-hmm. a field into mm-hmm. a park, so we mm-hmm. ended up, you know, going to city council, mm-hmm. going to the recreation department, and we ended up, you know, having them, mm-hmm. you know, turn a field, which was Deschler, mm-hmm. Baseball field, mm-hmm. into Deschler Park.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we put walking paths in there, we mm-hmm. planted trees in there, we got the community involved,
mm-hmm.
and we also worked on Fairwood Park. Fairwood mm-hmm. Park is in our purview also.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically what we had to do, we had to get there and we had to do a plan.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was a plan that worked out, and that plan has taken 6 years.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, but
yeah.
right now, if you go to Fairwood Park,
mm-hmm.
you will have about 3 or 4 shelter houses.
Mm-hmm.
You have a skateboard rink.
Mm-hmm.
You have a walking mm-hmm. path, mm-hmm. you know, so mm-hmm. that you can run. But that took about 6 years,
mm-hmm.
you know, to get done, and that was constant.
Mm-hmm.
Also, you know, they wanted to get rid of Fairwood Swimming Pool.
Uh-huh.
And Fairwood Swimming Pool, they were going to demolish it.
Uh-huh.
And so, but we said, well, why would you take the swimming pool out when there's no other swimming pool in our vicinity?
Mm-hmm.
And so we got with Zach Klein,
mm-hmm.
and Zach Klein met with us. And let me tell you, we met at 8, 9 o'clock at night when he got off.
Uh-huh.
But we did get things done.
Uh-huh.
And now we have the new swimming pool over there at on Rhodes Park,
uh-huh.
Which is what do they call it over there?
Driving
Fairwood Park swimming pool.
It's beautiful over there. You can look at that, and probably your children and your grandchildren
I
participated with
that.
I love it. Larry, did you have something to comment?
I did. Mm-hmm. I really want to kind of take what Mr. Boykin has said and mm-hmm. kind of expound on it a little bit. Just listening to what he said,
mm-hmm.
Because I'm a newbie at this mm-hmm. in one mm-hmm. sense,
uh-huh.
Especially from the president's position.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll say this much. Just in listening to him, it takes a level of commitment from individuals to mm-hmm. obviously get things
mm-hmm.
done.
Mm-hmm.
And not only get things done, but it takes a lot of their personal time.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's people who don't understand the dynamics that mm-hmm. don't get involved and
mm-hmm.
don't see that, you know, there's a lot of people like
mm-hmm.
really taking their personal time to do stuff
mm-hmm.
just because they love their community.
No,
they
yes.
want to be a part of their community.
Yes.
And the part I don't understand is
uh-huh.
most people, when you look at especially mortgages and you look at
mm-hmm.
a living quarters, as far as that goes,
mm-hmm.
that's a vested interest. That is a vested interest all the way around. Mm-hmm. I don't understand how people can say I can spend hundreds of thousands of dollars and put a mortgage on something and not want to protect it, not want to be involved with it. And I've realized that things change. The other thing I wanted to say, too, is because some neighborhoods, and probably Mr. Boykin probably can expound on this, too, are becoming a lot more transition. There's a lot more younger people. You have older people moving around. And so I'm finding out with a lot of young ones, we're having to go more cyber. That's what people used to, using their cell phone apps. But you never want to forget your Jerrians. You never want to get the people who've been vested for a long time in your communication. Sometimes you have to use more conventional ways of knocking on their door, reaching out with a newsletter, giving them a phone call. Just different forms of communication come for different types of people.
Well, I'd like to add to that.
Yes, sir.
Because that tends to be a dilemma. Because in the older neighbors and residents of the community, they're used to face-to-face.
Yes.
Okay, or they're used to someone coming around. Yeah. And they always say, we can get some kids to drop off these flyers. Well, you know, if you live in an inner city neighborhood, primarily there's no kids. Okay, there are no kids in these neighborhoods. And these neighborhoods are being gentrified. And we need to communicate. Now, the people who are gentrifying these neighborhoods, they're in communication with each other electronically, okay? And they're sending them all the data, all the information, and all that. So basically what's happening is that by the time a house is sold or by the time somebody has boarded that house up and is waiting, you know, to for the prices to go up on it, you know, it's done deal, you know, and they move people into the neighborhood, and they don't really want to share in the civic association of the preceding residents. Okay, they want to start their own, you know, and I look at this as, for example, Driving Park, and Driving Park used to be a commission, but when new people moved into the neighborhood, it was reduced to a civic. Okay, and now there's something called the Livingston Avenue Commission. Okay, and so, and those people are the new people in the community. All right, and they have ties to City Hall, and they're getting things done, and you know, and they're gentrifying the neighborhood and all of that. So it's kind of a test of wills. Okay, so I would say use all the methods. For those who have the internet and email, then you use that. For those who don't have it, just go house to house.
I'm a door knocker. I love knocking on doors. You know, when I'm Larry and I are in the same community. But one of the best things about it is I took my grandkids with me, and we didn't know a lot of our neighbors. But when we walked the doors and started talking to them, my granddaughter said, "Grandma Lonnie, these neighbors are so wonderful." I wish that she didn't want to go at first. But then when she knocked on all the doors, she said, "Oh my gosh, they're so nice to me," you know. And so we do need to communicate. Sometimes you do all that technology stuff and you don't even get to know the person that's face.
But Yolanda, let me say this, Yolanda. You like that, but the reality is the younger people don't want you coming to the door. They want you to send them a text message.
I ran into the text. You had to do the text, the email, the door-to-door, the paper, all that to get it to do your communication. Well, we are, tell us the benefits for being a member. We only have a few minutes and it has to be brief, but the benefits of being involved in your community. What benefit, Ms. Connie Boyd?
Okay, well, I would say this, the greatest benefit of all is to know my neighbors. The greatest benefit of all is to show my neighbors that I care about my community. And I'm committed to my community. And guess what? And if you show that you care, your neighbors will care. And so I'm serious. There's some good people. They just a lot of times don't know how to access the system. A lot of times it's the first time they've ever confronted the system. And so you got to realize that it's a new thing for a lot of people.
All right. What are some of the benefits?
Well, I would, you know, again, what Mr. Boykin was saying, which is absolutely true, is to create that voice that people can absolutely hear within the sounds of the community. Like, say, for example, when you get into activities and you're doing things and you're knocking on doors and you're getting to know your neighbors and they start to see the changes that you're making, what you're looking to do is draw out to them, because one of the things I want to be able to do is to draw the young kids, because the young kids sometimes do not feel a part of, even though they should be part of their community. And if you can get those, because what we've found out statistically is when you hit those numbers, then you'll find out the safety measures and the crime measures in your neighborhood have a tendency to go down.
That is so wonderful. You know, I think that we all need to be involved in our communities and make it beautiful, safe. It doesn't take, we can't sit around and wait on somebody to do it. We all have to get involved.
Absolutely.
You know, is there anything else you want to tell the listening audience about organizing?
Well, I would like to say this, is that always remember that your home is the most valuable thing that you have. And to respect that, you need to get involved in your community.
All right, get involved. That's telling us that it's time to go. But listen, I'd like to thank Connie Morgan and Larry Mason for being on this week's program of All in Our Family. And I'll see you next week. Love you.
Got the power. The world's greatest radio. Talktainmentradio.com.